You are checking off every box, or perhaps you're well on your way. You've built the career, the wealth, the success. So why does it feel like you're still missing the main event? My name is Azhar Hamid. I left business decades ago only to discover that financial freedom without a purpose is empty. I dedicated myself to a new question: how high is my tide? All the lessons that I have learned from the business world, I've taken them to the nonprofit world. I served as global president of a multi-billion dollar nonprofit. I guided boards to greater awareness and aligned the mission for global impact. I have co-produced an Oscar-nominated film and led campaigns that freed captive animals. This isn't about charity. It's about a higher form of investment. This is about rising by lifting others. This masterclass is your system to write your living eulogy and your ultimate exit plan, a strategic blueprint to transform your success into significance. Through my proven RISE framework, you will learn to deploy your time, your talent, and your treasure with purpose. This is how you build a legacy that outlives you. So let's find out, how high is your tide? Let's do it.
I was born in Lahore, Pakistan, and raised in a middle-class household. There were just a lot of us. I learned early to be seen, you jump higher, and to be heard, you sing the loudest. I arrived in America with $50 in one paid semester. Everything else, like tuition, rent, survival, came from washing dishes and delivering pizzas. My spark came earlier. The burn of finishing absolute dead last in a 100-meter race with my parents watching, that became my fuel, driving me to become best athlete 3 years straight. And later, with the same tenacity, to build a successful company operating across the globe. The journey wasn't a straight line. My first venture failed, pushing me to the brink of bankruptcy. When I finally found success, it attracted frivolous lawsuits designed to bleed me dry. The same perseverance that won me those athletic awards came to my rescue and became my shield. I retired fairly young. I had arrived. I could have just lived comfortably numb. But I could not just watch the pain and suffering in this world, the potential loss in young people, the deep divide between haves and have-nots, from the safety of a VIP box seat. No. My father's Sufi ethos had taught me that the real journey was inward, and that journey demanded I turn my life toward purpose. I have guided major nonprofits in education and health on growth and strategy. Today, I lead the world's largest interest-free microloan organization as its global volunteer president. And I drive animal justice, environmental advocacy, and empowerment through my foundation, Funding Umano. This belief in connection led me to host the largest golf tournaments between historical archenemies, using the game of golf to build bridges between people. It is the people-to-people love we call mohabbat. Beyond my work, I am a husband and a father, a storyteller through poetry, music, and the lens of a camera, and of course, a weekend golfer. I want to share my living eulogy as a living, breathing, work in progress. Something that may one day resonate with someone who has come dead last in their own 100-meter race with their parents watching.
When I was thinking of doing this masterclass, naturally, I wanted to ask a couple of my friends, what do they think? As opposed to asking me what this class is all about, what is my motivation, my friend asked me who is my makeup artist. He was educating me on face contours. After hearing the fact that even my friend was not really focused on the subject matter, my resolve to do this class became even stronger. I thought I must do it. I know out there are people who want more than likes and dislikes and emojis and, you know, algorithms telling them what to watch and form opinions or cancel somebody because they have that right on internet. I think life, to me, has a bigger purpose, at least the one that one can give to it. It doesn't have one, but if you think about it, the reason that you give to life is the meaning that you make out of it. Maybe there's somebody watching my class will find something I have experienced, taught, learned, shared, accomplished that resonates with them. And they find hope and encouragement to continue doing the good work they already are doing. In this class, I'll share what I call a spark. In my language, we call it kira, which is a little insect that bothers you, irritates you. This is something that if you don't address, keep on pricking your conscience. How do we take that spark and make it into a flame? Well, we need to fan the spark first and then find fuel for it. Are you also looking for that purpose, for that reason, for meaning? Are you worried about your legacy, that when you leave this world, how will your story be told? In this class, I'm going to share with you the three big currencies that I have seen of impact: time, talent, and treasure. You usually have one, two, or all three. Bingo, if you have all three. I'll share with you how our tribal mindset has been stopping us to expand our empathy beyond the clan, the tribe that we associate ourselves with. I've also seen how this scarcity myth has been promoted so that the 1% can continue to have a lot more than the rest of the world. In this journey, I have found art and storytelling to be an excellent form of bringing social change. Stories have power, we believe in them, and if they have a call to action, those stories become a dynamite of good change in this world. I'll also share with you the RISE model that is an outcome of 20 years of social services with nonprofit companies that I have been part of as on the board member or led them as a president or have contributed to see how we can best use our limited resources for the most impactful work that we can all do together. And last but not least, what is our exit plan? We owe a huge ecological debt to this planet. We need to give it back, and the only way to give it back is to pay it forward. I would love for you to join my class, and let's explore the self-audit of life I call, how high is your tide? It's a metaphor that when the tide is high, it lifts all the boats up. You want to rise high? Lift the world up. And that's all I'm asking, to take the small little steps that you can hopefully learn in this class, that we will do some exercises, there will be some workbooks, there will be some stories of very inspiring people, all real life stories that I hope will inspire you. How high is your tide? Is a self-audit to ask oneself, what is that I'm doing today and want to do tomorrow that can make this world a better place? So let's start with how it starts. It starts with the little spark inside you, that little bug. We call it kira. the little bug that keeps on pricking your conscience that something is not right. Something is against the values that you believe in. And you should address it. You should change it. Now, traditionally, we have been told to be conforming to ideas given at birth. So we really are not encouraged to question, not encouraged to think if there's a better way of doing it. And that spark, I tell you, is your superpower. Never underestimate that little bug, the power that bug has to change the world. This is the same bug that has made inventors and artists and philosophers and good politicians and good business people address it by listening to it. I encourage you to write down, whenever you get a chance, all those things that you have found to be something that you need to address. Now, a spark itself, as you can all appreciate, will not do much. Spark needs to become flame. That journey of the spark to flame is a journey in which the spark has to find fuel. And the spark needs to be fanned for the fuel to catch fire to become the flame that you would like to see in this world. You are that flame. Your transformation from that itch, from that spark to flame, requires a little bit of thinking. Well, first of all, we have to ask ourselves, are you born with that spark? Do you acquire that? That's Yaru, 14 years and going strong. Just want to go and drink some water. I was saying that this spark, do we have it? Are we born with it? Or do we get it from somewhere? How is it nurtured? I think both. Our evolution has taught us that cooperation and communication and reciprocal empathy is what helped us survive together. Because we were not the strongest when it comes to the animal kingdom. We survived because we cooperated. So empathy is inbuilt in us. That gene is there. The connection is there. So why do we become sort of unempathic towards others? Because of our tribal mindset. In this class, we'll talk about how this spark is taken to a flame. This spark needs fanning and fuel. And how did I find fuel for my spark? When I came to the U.S., I worked for a company. And I think sometimes not the best companies or not the best teachers are your best teachers because they have lessons on what not to do. And those lessons sometimes are just very precious. So in this class, we're going to talk about how you take that spark, the inner calling, and listen to it. Don't let it die. This is your superpower. Don't let go of your superpower. You will need it to become the flame that you are to change the world. And I think this particular spark has different forms. It could be innovation. It could be an expression. It could be a painting. It could be a business, a process you want to change in your company. It could be a leadership philosophy that you want to build around what you started as an entrepreneur. It could be use of the wealth that you've been blessed with that you like to turn around and use it differently. So having a spark in your life is a gift. I was very lucky that I had an unfair advantage that my parents, very Sufi ethos upbringing, humility, helping, empathy was never preached. It was practiced. I saw it firsthand. And all those parents who are watching this, you already know that kids don't do what you say. Children do what you do. I conclude by saying your spark is your first step. And this little exercise that is part of the workbook, I'd like you to name all the sparks you had and somehow they died or they still might be there. And what is that you did and what is that you want to do about those sparks? We will not talk about how to find fuel for those. I will not talk about the end goal yet. In the next chapter, we'll go and talk about once you identified your calling, your kira, your itch, your spark. What's the next step? What should we do next? I'll see you in the next class. I met Boyne at a TED conference in Vancouver in 2025.
Bowen was just 16 when he went diving and saw some plastic, actually more plastic than fish. That moment became his spark. He came home asking, why can't the ocean clean itself? Because the currents move predictably and plastic floats. So his fuel, which is chapter 4, came from his engineering, fluid mechanics and motivation. So instead of chasing trash with ships, he designed passive U-shaped barriers that let the ocean's own energy funnel plastic into collection zones. In rivers, he created solar-powered interceptors that guide trash onto conveyors and onto the dumpsters before it ever reaches the sea. So at 30, that spark has become a flame. Systems operating in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch and interceptors deployed on 15 plus rivers in the world which are polluting the sea. So he takes only a modest salary, choosing mission over comfort. Because ocean plastic kills turtles, poisons fish, destroys coral, and breaks into microplastics that ends up in us, leading cause of cancer. So Bowen turned a teenage spark into a flame strong enough to ignite the world to protect the planet.
We have identified the spark. Now it's time to find some fuel for it. Fanning the spark so the fuel can catch fire. In very simple words, could also be said the inspiration, the motivation, the encouragement. Why is it so important? Because when we are told what difference will it make, it's just too overwhelming. When we are told this is too difficult, it's too risky. You'll be standing alone by yourself. They'll make fun of you. They'll laugh at you. Most of us get discouraged because we are in constant survival mode. We think making a living, paying for our bills is our number one and the only responsibility at times. But we can do more. Trust me, we can do more at all stages of life. This motivation, encouragement, requires what Baba Farid, a 12th century philosopher, from India said once,
"Ut Farida Sutya, Mela Vikhanja, Mil Jai Koi Baksha, Tu Hi Baksha Ja."
It translates to something like that. Oh, Farida, I mean the poet, you're sleeping, not physically, of course, metaphorically sleeping. Get awakened. Wake up. You need to wake up and follow somebody who has been awakened. So when you follow the awakened, you will, under that person's light, see the path. So in our lives, we need to surround ourselves with people who inspire us. When I was a child, my father used to say, a man is known by the company he keeps. My best company is changemakers. When I sit with the founders of one of the largest nonprofits in the world, I get inspired by their vision. I get encouraged to do more, because they've shown it's possible. So if you look at example of Rumi, had all the knowledge he could get. He was a scholar by all stretch of imaginations, but inside he was empty. And then he ran into his teacher, Shams of Tabriz. And the beautiful part was when Shams told Rumi, "You're not ready yet. You have way too much ego. You can't learn if you have ego. You have to be humble." Humility opens the path, opens the doors. They say that mind is like a parachute. It only works when it's open. So if you want to find encouragement for your motivation, encouragement for your idea, encouragement for your spark. You've got to surround yourself with people that you are inspired by. And that's a good self audit. What kind of people I hang around with? Are these the kind of people who will help me get where I need to get? Or these are the kind of people who I will invest a lot of time with very little outcome that I want from life? Another example is Steve Jobs, great visionary. But without Steve Wozniak, who was the technical guru, he could have never accomplished what he did, especially with Apple. So you got to surround yourself with people who take your spark and provide you the kind of motivation to do the research you need to move forward. And for that, you need two things. An inner engine, which is what you possess, the firepower that nobody can give you. Like my mom used to say, beta, apne gale mein thook hai, to geela hai. Koi dusra usme dal nahi sakta. Nobody can salivate for you. You have to salivate with your own saliva. And it's so true. That inner engine comes from you. Motivation, by birth, upbringing. And the second is the ecosystem in which your inner engine will perform the best. This will give you the best version for yourself. That ecosystem is what you inspire to get. Find it. Find people who can find it for you. Observe somebody without being noticed because you are part of this system. You will get inspired and do what they do best. So in class, we will have a little exercise that you will find out who are the influences in your life or influences you would like to have in your life for the spark that you have so that your inner engine and the ecosystem around your engine is conducive to take your spark into the flame transition. So in this class, I will end by saying, take a deep breath and think about all those great ideas you had, but you didn't find the outer ecosystem. A company that doesn't encourage people to give ideas or change anything. Any faith or dogma that does not want to budge from what it believes in. A family structure, that culture that does not allow you to be your authentic self. That ecosystem is what you need to change before the spark can become a flame. Now we're going to find what kind of fuels that are available to us. Now that we're motivated, we found the ecosystem. There are three key ingredients of change: time, talent, and treasure, also known as, of course, money. Time is the most precious of all of those gifts, and then it ends. If there's one thing for certain, time comes with an expiration date. So utilizing time as in investing time is the best way to look at time. And that is what I think is completely and utterly yours. Nobody can give you 1 second extra than the time that you have on this planet. So first of all, if you are passionate about something, show me that you have invested your time in it, whether understanding it, whether supporting it, whether thinking about it and doing something about it. When people say they're very passionate about supporting artists or very passionate about animals, and then I ask them, how much time have you invested in this? Most often I hear, you know, I will in the future. You know, I have been busy. I've been meaning to do that. I know at that time they have this passion to like something, but the execution and the commitment to do something about it is missing. When I look at some of the founders of the greatest nonprofits in the world, the ones who have built the largest schooling system, 2,000 schools, when I look at the founder who built the largest nonprofit for interest-free loans, these people have given their life to their passions. This requires time. This is not a fling. This is a lifelong commitment of time. Resources will come. Talent will come. So number one is time. Number two is most underappreciated resource called talent. Your talent most likely is one I'm talking about because you are a talented person. You have certain skills that can be very useful in taking your spark to the transitional state of flame. But you can always get talent. You can always get people who believe in your vision. People believe in your mission. Talent is out there. They just need the right platform to encourage them, invite them to come and work on that platform, because your authenticity, your honesty, your selflessness will be quite apparent. You can't fake that. So talent is your second biggest agent of change. And third is treasure, money. Money is the ingredient of scale. You can scale things with resources. I call the battery power. You have the ability to fund. If you have money, if you've been blessed with, we all have a little bit extra than we need. I can tell you, when I was in college and I was a dishwasher, I still had a couple of dollars to give to somebody who I thought was hungry. That's all I had. And, you know, as life progressed and I had more, there's always more to give. But if your standard of living keeps on increasing, you'll never have enough for the standard of giving. I know a story of a gentleman who has given up to $50 million so far, practically his entire net worth, for causes around the world. The more we distribute, the more ROI it brings back. That's why I want to come up with a term called return on generosity. This is an investment in generosity. As a business person, you want to know, where did my money go? What did it do? Remember, nonprofits sell us impact, but how often can they show the impact? We hear stories. We have a box called Feel Good, but I am talking about when you donate, stop. Invest like an investor. And we'll talk more about it in the RISE model in a lot more detail. So time, talent, and treasure. We're going to do a little exercise. In the exercise, you will have three columns. You will write your passions, your sparks, and then you'll write time, talent, and treasure. And find out how much time were you able to give to your passion, whether it's learning guitar or playing guitar for a charity, whether it's sitting with a grieving family, whether it's investing in change in educating children in a third world where they have no schooling, whatever is that you're passionate about. There's no right and wrong. Everybody has different passions. Just write in these columns what has stopped you so far from doing what you believe in. In the next chapter, we will find out is how we can apply those passions that we have of and the currencies of time, talent, and treasure into your spark. This story is about a cyclist who had traveled 70,000 kilometers, 70 countries, a fabulous photographer. I had met him a few years ago while he was starting his journey from southern part of South America, going all the way to Alaska. And as he was crossing through Los Angeles, we had a short lunch meeting, just hello, hi. And turns out it became a fair of working together on projects, because I asked him a question. You're a fantastic cyclist. You're a fantastic photographer. There are many cyclists who have traveled more than you have. There are many photographers that probably can take better pictures than you can. What is your story? And he asked me, what do you mean? And I said, well, if you connect your talent and your time with a purpose, you'll find a new wave of joy in your life. Try it. Well, he left and he finished his journey and he came back, and the rest is history. When we worked on several projects, which we'll talk about, how we use his filmmaking ability and storytelling ability to help people whose homes were washed away in the floods, or daily wages who had nothing to eat because there was no work during the pandemic. Recently, his project is to build or rebuild or refurbish a hospital in Madagascar. One particular picture was able to raise just alone $25,000. Now that hospital has new beds, medicine they never had any. The hospital now has solar, so there'll be light in and outside the hospital. And so much so that he, being a cyclist, he was able to build a bicycle ambulance so people don't have to walk all the way. This ambulance brings them. This is the power of using your time and your talent, and the treasure comes when you are on an honest, selfless road. There's no shortage of funds that'll follow you. So that can never be an excuse that I don't have the money. Here's an example, and I'm going to put a link. You can follow this particular gentleman. His name is Kamran on Bike, and so much so that he's the one who's doing the masterclass right now with me. That's the power of storytelling. That's the power of time, talent, and treasure. Most of us are very kind to the people we know. Well, let's start with our own children or parents. We are DNA bound to be kind to them. This is how evolution works. So no credit there, to be honest. Then we expand that to our family and friends and people we know and people from the same country, people who speak the same language, people who have the same faith. Naturally, we tend to benefit them or benefit from, because that's our in-group. In-group creates an out-group. So empathy is very selective. It's kind to one kind of people and very unkind to the other. That's why during wars, war crimes are committed with such brutality, because we don't feel the pain and suffering of the other. In this chapter, I like to highlight, in the modern times, when we call this a universal village, we're all connected. I think we need to see past our tribal compassion, tribal empathy, because only then human race 1.0 can move towards human race 2.0, where we are all one. And in this one, don't forget animals. We still use animals for drug testing. We are unaware of the brutality and the inhumane treatment farms do to animals, so they can produce more of them for us and be more profitable. So you can be very empathic towards human at large, then you expand your empathy to include animals. We don't need to treat them as if they don't feel the pain and suffering of what we do to them. And you expand that empathy further out. You look at the environment. You look at the mountains and the streams and the forests and the glaciers as part of your empathy. Because we like to keep our homes very clean, but we like to take all the trash that we produce and dump it in some third world country and spread the disease and suffering to them because we can. We need to keep an eye on the industrial waste that is generated to feed our insatiable desire to buy, and buy more. Because the countries where they are made, they are polluting the environment. And as an empathic person, you're careful when you're making those buying decisions. So, tribal empathy is very dangerous. We need to be aware of it. I remember Baba Bulle Shah said something.
Chal bulleya si utthe chaliye jithe sare anne na koi saadi zaat pachhane na koi sanu manne.
It translates to, oh bulleya, let's go to that world, that village, that town where everybody is blind. So nobody can see who I am, what am I wearing, what is my ethnicity? What is the color of my skin? That is, let's go there where nobody judges anybody. That's called inclusive empathy. And Sant Kabir also said something very beautiful. Kabir said,
Peer khada bazaar mein mange sab ki khair. Na kaho se dosti, na kaho se bair.
Kabir says, I'm standing in the marketplace, of course, the world, and I am hoping and praying for the goodwill of everybody, because I have no friends, because I have no enemies. This is a beautiful message of duality that we struggle with, that you don't have to be either or, you can be all encompassing. That's empathy. That's practicing empathy and putting empathy into action. I always say empathy without action is hallucination. It doesn't move a needle. If you are empathic towards anything, show me. Take your spark and move it towards the flame. Put your time, talent, and treasure in your empathy, so I know that you're following up on what you believe in. Your commitment is shown when you invest your most beautiful gifts, time, talent, and treasure. Two short stories. In 1979, a gentleman by the name of Jadhav in Assam, India, was walking through an area that had a lot of dead snakes. So he decided to plant a few bamboo trees. And lo and behold, every year, the bamboo trees started to grow because he would come back every day and plant some more bamboo trees. Around 1,400 acres of land has been cultivated with trees. What these trees have now brought back, elephants who come to mate over there are now chimps over there are tigers there. The entire wildlife has, this ecosystem has been built by this one man. And the second one, very, very also close to my heart, is Abdul Sattar Eidi, a man in Karachi, extremely poor. He would beg for others on the street. One day saw that a woman died because he couldn't get ambulance to the hospital. Well, lo and behold, he built the world's largest free ambulance service. And most beautiful part about his empathy was that people were throwing illegitimate children into garbage bins. So he put cots outside his nonprofit where in the darkness of the night, people will come and put a baby into one of those carts. And he didn't ask if they're Christians or Hindus or Muslims, whoever they were. He adopted all of those children as his own children, gave them his name so that they can get an ID card. They can have a life. They can go to school. Now, that's a beautiful example that your empathy should not be tribal, but it should be purely inclusive of everybody that comes along your way. You're blind to their color, to their race, to their ethnicity and their political association or alliance or sexual preference. A very beautiful exercise we have designed for you. You will basically design five circles. The innermost circle is your DNA circle. Your mom, your dad, your children, your brother, your sister. And then it becomes a little bit bigger circle and you put people that are known to you, your friends, people from your city, from your school. Then the circle becomes bigger. And then you have people who are not known to you, but you feel empathic, maybe in a different country or a different faith altogether. And the outermost circle is the circle where you have gone beyond human. You are now being empathic to animals and the plight of animals around the world. And you're also looking at the environment as a living, breathing entity, that without the environment, neither the animal will prosper or nor our survival is guaranteed. And once you play with that exercise, you will also assess how empathic are you, how far your empathy has gone so far. I think this is your own self-audit. Nobody's looking at you but you. One of my most effective tool is storytelling. I have seen the power of storytelling firsthand. I've been lucky enough to be part of this journey of making movies such as The Glass Worker, which was nominated for the Oscars this year, as well as short stories with a call to action. Stories are very interesting to human beings because we have been believing in stories only, by and large, for a long time. Our neural chemistry triggers oxytocin, which is the hormone of empathy and connection. So when we hear a story, we build an emotional connection with the storyteller and with the story. The beautiful part about stories is that they sit in our memory for generations, not facts. That's the power of storytelling. Now, of course, the story I'm talking about here is telling story for the common good. The stories that have helped humans and animals alike by having a call to action that has changed the way we present stories. We did a very large film festival where 700 short stories were submitted on empathy alone. That's just some fantastic work. A 30-second, a 50-second short story can change the way we look at animals or humans or the planet at large. Thank you. Storytelling is only effective, in my opinion, if it's honest, if it's authentic, if it's real, if it's original, and it is said for a purpose. Some divine help comes in that story. Things start to move. Otherwise, today, AI is producing scripts, AI is producing voice, and you have YouTube full of such podcasts and all kind of stuff. Why is the world not changing? Because the stories need to have the soul of reality, the soul of compassion, the soul of empathy, and the lived hard work that goes into filmmaking. So I am a very big believer that you must learn to tell your story or find somebody who can tell your story, because your story is unique. You are unique. Your passion is unique. This has to be told by you from your heart with all the sincere intentions, so it makes home in other people's hearts. We came to know about 30 chimps that had been used for drug testing, trauma, cutting them open. I mean, in short, they lived a life of torture and pain so that we can develop medicines for humans. These animals had nowhere to go because there were no use left. And we came to know about this particular project and also found out that Joaquin Phoenix, who has done a lot of good work for animals, has agreed to be part of this short film. The film was made, it was released with a call to action to adopt chimpanzees. All 30 of them got adopted. And FedEx carried all of these to their respective sanctuaries free of cost. Now, taking a chimp from the cage to a sanctuary is a complicated project because you have to be very careful and they're very emotional being. One particular image of a baby chimp that when he jumps out of the cage and for the first time looks at the open sky, he is bewildered. His eyes are wide open and he gives a big hug to his mom that he for the first time is free. Imagine the price of freedom we pay. We send men and women to die for our freedom, and then we cage these animals for our selfish motives. They also feel like us. They also have families. They have emotions. They also feel the pain. The other story, lived story, and I have a deep connection with it, because for me, to be honest, it sounded like an out-of-body experience. This elephant, it has been known in the world to be the loneliest elephant in the world. Cher, the pop star celebrity, had been trying for years to help this particular animal in Islamabad Zoo to be freed, who was tied to a small chain. I was able to write a song, sing it, record it, and with my friends, we would put together a little animation. And that song went viral. Thousands of people saw that and decided never to support animal cruelty, especially the captive animals in zoos. I was in touch with some of the people who were responsible in facilitating, in conjunction with other people who were working on this project to free the animal. And he's now in Cambodia, where he's now roaming about, having a jolly good time. So this is the power of stories, but stories that have no call to action are entertainment. No matter how heart-wrenching or how effective you think they are, when the lights come on, everything is dissolved. I also tell you this from my experience raising funds. When we raise funds, we have an emotional high when we tell a story. If you don't ask for call to action right at that moment, we lose the ability to generate funds because human beings are like that. They have very short memory. That is why the pledges that we collect most of them never come through because people, when they go home, the emotional connection they had with the story is lost. So my message to all of you, your story is unique, it's beautiful, and don't be shy telling it. Even if one person listens to your message and it changes their life, it's worth it. One of the biggest myths is the scarcity myth, that we just simply don't have enough for ourselves or for the world, so we better go and grab as much as we can. Remember the pandemic? In those days, there were videos that people were fighting over toilet paper. I mean, this is a time when we should have been the most compassionate because everybody was in it, but we were not. We were scared that we will run out of resources. I think if you think about the needs of these people, there is plenty on this beautiful planet to be shared. But if 1% are going to own 50% of the resources, and if the 10%, top 10%, are going to own 80% of the resources, there will be scarcity. Caused by our ego, caused by our greed, caused by our insecurity. Because if you check out our evolution, we were not sure if the next crop will happen. We were not sure that the animal that we have for ourselves will not be eaten by an animal bigger than us. So that mindset still is there. That's why across the world when I travel and I speak to people, most of them are very well off. I see that if they paid their taxes, that's how far they want to go. That's fine. I've also find people that give their whatever obligation the religion has told. If I was to leave everything to two people, to my two sons, thousands of beautiful, talented PhDs, I call them, poor, hungry, and driven individuals will never see a day in school or college. And I know what an equalizer education is because I was one of the beneficiaries of getting education, especially in the US. When we distribute, we make the flow happen. You know, it's best when we have beautiful breeze of flowing resources than a stagnant pond which stinks. Hoarding may be the biggest cause of suffering in this world, because clearly hoarding is also keeping people from their potential. Hoarding is also not giving the opportunities to the most talented people on the planet to make a better life for themselves.
ਉਹ ਬੰਦਿਆ ਵੇਖ ਤੇ ਸਹੀ ਅਸਮਾਨ 'ਤੇ ਉੜਦੇ ਪੰਛੀ ਵੇਖ ਤੇ ਸਹੀ ਇਹ ਕੀ ਕਰਦੇ ਨੇ ਨਾ ਇਹ ਕਰਦੇ ਰਿਸ ਜ਼ਖੀਰਾ ਨਾ ਇਹ ਭੁੱਖੇ ਮਰਦੇ ਨੇ ਕਦੇ ਕਿਸੇ ਨੇ ਪੰਖ ਪਖੇਰੂ ਭੁੱਖੇ ਮਰਦੇ ਵੇਖੇ ਨੇ ਬੰਦੇ ਕਰਦੇ ਰਿਸ ਜ਼ਖੀਰਾ ਬੰਦੇ ਭੁੱਖੇ ਮਰਦੇ ਨੇ
Hoarding is greed that has no end. I meet people around the world. They just don't know how to grow beside a single dimension of growth. More, more, and even more. I will talk about one particular gentleman who I had the great pleasure and honor of meeting in North Carolina, who had given $50 million so far of his entire net worth by and large, to causes all around the world. He said, I would have been the first in sixth generation to have hoarded wealth. Five generations before me have invested in our children's education and values, not in leaving assets behind. That's called leaving a legacy of change, a legacy of purpose, a legacy of meaning. That is what's so inspiring for me that I've also taken that lead and have decided to do the same because it makes a lot of sense. Because we all live in a connected world. One of my favorite couplets from Sant Kabir is,
Bada hua to kya hua, jaise ped khajur, paathi ko chhaya nahi, phal lage itni dur.
That is a great couplet on, you can be big and strong as long as you're humble and soft and giving and caring and sharing. If it's all about yourself, that's arrogance, that's greed. And that's what the Sufis of our times and Sufis before have been preaching about humanity at large. People often ask me, you've traveled all over the world, you've done a lot of work with fundraising and met all kinds of people. If you were to generalize, what buckets are you going to put them in? I would say it's impossible to do so, or not fair. But if I was to choose two buckets, one would be a bucket of what I call faize, people who are givers. And the other one is befaize, people who are takers. The givers are not necessarily people with a lot of wealth. They are just givers. They give their time, they give their talent, they give their treasure in whatever capacity they can. When you come to them with something that needs help, they don't say, I don't know anybody who can do that or I can do that. They find a solution for you. They think it has become their problem. Whether they are a shoeshine boy who doesn't have the polish, who goes and gets one, or whether it's somebody very powerful who uses their positive influence to get you justice.
Nichandi ashnai kolon ki kisi phal paya kik karte angur chadhaya har guchha zakhmaya.
The befaize are takers. It's all about them. Just don't have time for anything else. Takers are the beneficiaries of the kindness of others. With proper nurturing, with love, compassion, empathy, and being with people that are givers, they can transform. And we should never give up on people. Once they decide to cross the chasm and be on this side, they can move mountains. We are all work in progress. We just keep on developing ourselves to be a better version. This is one of my favorite stories. It comes from Kamran on bike when he was traveling some remote part of a village. He had to get somewhere. They were just tired from cycling all day. Didn't have a choice but to keep going. But the hill was very steep and had a huge headwind. And the road was full of rocks and bumps. And he was really struggling to get up the hill. And he saw a little child, maybe 5-6 years old, who was just running right after Kamran on his bike. And typically what happens for cyclists and tourists, when they come to these small villages, children chase them to get candy or sometimes a coin. They get something out of tourists. He thought this child is chasing for the same. So he kept on telling him to go away. No, go. I don't have nothing. No, go away. And the child is kept following the bicycle, and the distance between the two getting closer. And the closer it got, the more he said, go, I have nothing, no candy, no money, go. And the kid wouldn't listen. And he said, what kind of a kid is it? He is, so I'll just keep going. And then, boom, he felt a little push. And the bicycle, moved a bit faster, and he looked around, and this kid was just pushing the bike forward. By the time he could stop the bike and attend to him, the kid has already pushed it where it was in a safe place, and he turned around and he stopped the kid. This is an example of a giver. You don't need to be a billionaire to be a giver. You don't need to be retired to be a giver. You don't need to have a tremendous talent to be a giver. You just have to have the heart to give. This kid was so empathic. He had that little energy. So you're never too young, or never too weak, or never too old, or never somebody with no resources that you cannot give. You can always give what you have. You don't need to push it down the road, as they call it, and wait for some grand moment. You never know. That moment may never come. So give today, give now, give plenty. Most nonprofits sell a cause with the promise of an impact, but that impact is never reported. It's never measured. And those nonprofits, by and large, almost all that I know, are not sustainable. If you stop giving, they'll shut down. That's not very comforting. So I took all that I've learned and developed a system called RISE, R-I-S-E. So when you're looking at a product or a project or a program, ask yourself, does it have the R in it? Is it repeatable? Or is it a one-trick pony? Because if it's repeatable, it can be scaled. It can be scaled within the organization, and it can be scaled across the world. Because we need best practices to be replicated, with adjustments, of course. The I in the RISE model stands for impact. That's where I think the secret sauce lies. It is tough to calculate impact. That's why nobody does it. It also exposes the weaknesses in the promise of change, because impact is hard to calculate, but is a must. So when you support something, ask the impact statement from previous donations, contributions that the organization has been able to do. They will have an annual report, beautiful pictures and graphs and charts. Where's the impact? And then verify that impact if you can. Just like you invest in a mutual fund, you look at the performance of the fund manager to make sure before you buy one. It's available to you. Impact is the cornerstone of change. Without that, you're just throwing money into feel-good box called I'm doing something good. S stands for sustainability. It is so close to my heart because as a business person, I cannot run a business in negative. It has to have a positive cash flow. Sustainability means that this is a business also and must show you how they're going to be sustainable in the next 3 or 5 years. So if you stop giving, or one stops giving, that organization will still be around. So you know it's repeatable. You know the impact is measurable. You know they have a very good sustainability program, whether it be endowment, whether it's products that they sell, whether it's other ways of having a revenue stream, they should act like a business. Last E, empathy. What's the point of doing all of this if it doesn't really make this world a better place? So you make sure that when you invest in a product or in a company or in stock, you're investing in an ethical company that is empathic to its people and to the planet at large. Now you've got a dynamite system of impact, which is sustainable and is repeatable. The RISE model is something that I will put together in a spreadsheet, in a worksheet that you can download, and you can then plug in the causes that you've been supporting, and you have all the right as an investor. Again, I've used the word investor, not donor. Ask as an investor does for the impact statement, for the sustainability, the repeatability of their program and their growth.
When we talk about RISE, work that is repeatable, impact measurable, sustainable, and empathy-centric, several organizations already show us the way. For example, in a social enterprise, BRAC in Bangladesh, grew into the world's largest NGO by building social enterprises that generate revenue and subsidize its poverty programs. Their scale is powered by sustainability, not dependency. Again, creating employment for the senior citizens, a barefoot college in India as well as in Africa trains rural women, often grandmothers, to become solar engineers who electrify their own villages and others. It is community-owned, low-cost, and globally replicable. Aravind Eye Care in Health performs millions of cataract surgeries through a cross-subsidy system where paying patients finance free care for the poor. Excellence makes the model sustainable. And in agriculture, One Acre Fund in East Africa supports small holder of farms with seeds, tools, and training using a revolving loan model where farmers repay after harvest. Repayments fund the next cycle, creating a self-sustaining agriculture engine that lifts the entire community. And again, in the environmental protection, the ocean cleanup. The ocean cleanup began with a teenager spark and is moving towards long-term viability by turning recovered ocean plastic into products, converting waste into revenue. And of course, in education, Khan Academy shows a different pathway. Even a 50 cents to a dollar fee per active learner at global scale could make the platform fully self-sustaining while keeping access universally affordable. And of course, last but not least, our very own Ahuwat, our own RISE example.
a system where borrowers become donors, where partnership loans are built on fairness instead of interest, and where AWAKE, the education program, is endowment funded, so operating costs never burden the mission. Invest in one interest-free loan for an able and capable individual, and you lift an entire family. Invest to educate one student through AWAKE, and you ignite a chain reaction where today's beneficiaries become tomorrow's benefactor.
So as a businessman, you always are looking for an exit plan. When you sell your business, people in college have an exit plan to get a degree. So exit plan for life is also an important thing to think about. It's the exit plan of the exit plan. Lots of people actually don't think about it. Especially, I think, in our culture, death is something not to be talked about, thought about. Yeah, you plan taxes around it, but this is a very beautiful concept in the Eastern mythology, philosophy, and ethos. Because it values life. It values life every single day. Because it reminds you that you are dying every single day, also as you're living every single day. I would like to write my own eulogy. I call it the active eulogy. That eulogy must have an exit plan. Let me start with my debts that I must pay before I die. My ecological debt is so far that if I was to live till the age of 80, I would consume 60 million gallons of clean drinking water and then calculate the amount of water that is used to produce food for me and the industrial waste. My carbon footprint will be 1,100 metric ton. That's a huge ecological debt on my balance sheet. And if you put moral debt, all that I have taken from this world, question is, how do I give it back? How do I balance this balance sheet? I can't give it back, but I can pay it forward. My eulogy, which I encourage everybody to start writing their own and keep on improving your eulogy every 6 months by comparing what you have been able to achieve in the last 6 months in your life, and then set goals that if you do live long enough, that you will get there. So when I ask entrepreneurs, what are you going to do after you have an exit, which usually means they ran into or come into a lot of money, usually the answer is, I'm going to start something new, because that's all we have learned. We have been exposed only to more abundance, extravagance, exuberance. That's how we are known in society. My exit plan wants to be a living document that I write for myself and look at my exit plan every 6 months and see if I was to die today, what will be unsettled? What will be the unfinished business I leave behind? Remember, nobody's perfect. We will make mistakes. That's what makes us human. But to be aware of those mistakes and to have the courage to acknowledge and fix it is what I think my eulogy is going to be all about. That I was fallible, I made mistakes, and I shared my mistakes with the world so the world can be a better place. One of the most profound poems written by Baba Farid says,
ਦੇਖ ਫਰੀਦਾ ਮਿੱਟੀ ਖੁੱਲੀ ਮਿੱਟੀ ਉੱਤੇ ਮਿੱਟੀ ਡੁੱਲੀ ਮਿੱਟੀ ਹੱਸੀ ਮਿੱਟੀ ਰੋਈ ਅੰਤ ਮਿੱਟੀ ਦਾ ਮਿੱਟੀ ਹੋਈ ਨਾ ਕਰ ਬੰਦਿਆ ਮੇਰੀ ਮੇਰੀ ਨਾ ਏ ਤੇਰੀ ਨਾ ਏ ਮੇਰੀ
ਇਟਸ ਬਿਊਟੀਫੁਲੀ ਸੈਡ ਦੈਟ ਵੈਨ ਵੀ ਡਿਗ ਆਰ ਗ੍ਰੇਵ ਦ ਸੋਇਲ ਕਮਸ ਆਊਟ ਐਂਡ ਵੀ ਬਿਕਮ ਡਸਟ ਟੂ ਡਸਟ ਬਿਕਮ ਪਾਰਟ ਆਫ ਇਟ ਸੋ ਫੋਰ ਯੂ ਟੂ ਥਿੰਕ ਇਟਸ ਆਲ ਮੀ At the end of the day, we're all the same. We've come from this planet. We're going to go back into it. So making these boundaries and these territories and identities are all fake. We're all the same. We need to treat everybody with the same respect. So Baba Farid in the 12th century said something so profound. So let's wrap it up. We have talked about the spark that all of us have. We have discussed how that spark needs to be fanned. Fuel has to be found before a flame can be lit. We found that our tribal empathy holds us back from being the best version of ourselves. We have seen that scarcity is a myth. There's plenty for everybody. We have examined the three biggest currency of change: time, talent, and treasure that you can deploy to fuel your spark. We have seen that storytelling is such a powerful tool that if used properly, can move mountains. And we have seen examples of that. We have shared with you the exercises, the worksheets, the discussions that will prompt you to ask tough questions we have been discouraged to ask. We have seen that there are two kinds of people in this world, the givers and the takers. And you know who you are. In certain cases, you find yourself to be a little bit of a taker. And most cases, you will definitely be one of the givers. That's why you are interested in this class to begin with. The life's exit plan is your final living document of who you want to be, who you are today, and who you want to be. It's a roadmap that when you take your spark, and you take your fuel, and you take empathy, and you take that passion, and you deploy your time and talent and resources into anything, you can do wonders. This class is about a self-audit of how high is your tide. How high is your impact? When the tide is high, all boats rise. How many boats have you been able to lift in your life? You're benefited from the tides of others, and then you replicate that, and the ripple effect of your tide goes far and deep. This is an audit which has no right and wrong answers. Hopefully, it's a mirror that I use and see the hypocrisy in some cases that I feel I have that I need to fix. Because in my eulogy, I don't want that hypocrisy to be the centerpiece that I am not comfortable with. I hope and pray that this class has opened a few doors in your heart and some windows in your brain and is prompting you to take action. Because without action, it's hallucination. And hallucinations don't change the world. Actions do. I want to thank all those people who have mentored me, taught me, shared their stories with me. And I thank all the people who have given me the opportunity to serve them. I want you to be part of that journey where somebody will turn around and say thank you to you because you paved the path for them to walk on. Thank you. Thank you very much for being part of my class. All the best.
Follow me to my land of dreams, mountains, meadows, daffodils and streams, where every soul has a spark, fueling flame where it's dark. Where time is treasure not to hoard, one can have everyone aboard. Where empathy flows from soul to soul, where fates and flag have one goal, where giving multiplies when we divide, take what you need, nothing to hide. Children sleep in the lap of choice, grown up clean their dirty spots, gentle and soft, never stirring the pots. No wars to fight, no bodies to blame. Everyone is free from the scarcity game. No, no, it's not a dream. Yes, I swear, this land exists when you choose to care. But first, you let your ego go. You will reap what you will sow.